For the first time ever, I am thrilled to say we have an official sponsor for the Dirk Talk podcast, and that's Ariat. I've worn Ariat boots on every job site I've visited over the years, traveling in them across five continents. More importantly, I have yet to find a single project where working folks, unlike me, are not wearing Ariat boots and workwear in every condition imaginable. And there's really good reason for that, and that's because it's phenomenal stuff. And the more I've learned about Ariat and the company, the more I've loved their brand. So with this, Ariat is offering any Dirt Talk listener 10% off their next Ariat order at ariat.com/dirttalk. That's 10% off boots, jeans, and workwear at ariat.com/dirttalk or at the link in this episode's description. With that, let's get to the show. And we're back. Dirt Talk, coming to you live from Nashville, Tennessee. It's your hosts, Aaron and Alex. I think we've even stopped doing intros.
I just think that there's less value to them.
I agree.
I liked that we started them. I think it made sense to start there because a lot of podcasts do that. Well, I think my initial goal was to remove you doing an intro while the person's sitting on the phone or sitting in the room with you.
Which makes it super awkward.
Like, that was awkward.
Yeah.
And so then we added an intro, and it just, like, it was just fine. There wasn't, like, a content there. And so getting rid of it and me just, like, making sure the person's name is really clear in the labeling of the episode, I think it solves all of it.
And I don't... Yeah, and I don't want to be like another one of those podcasters like, we should just copy Joe Rogan. But there's a lot of value in how he does it. And I've started to see...
Well, and he's not the only podcast that does it that way either.
No. I mean, and maybe it wasn't even his idea. Probably the most well-known though, but
sure.
It works well for this format, mm-hmm. for the audience, for the guests we have. It's just, I like it much better.
There was a podcast I listened to for a number of years. It was called Nerdist. And it was more just like pop culture, long form conversations with actors or just like well-known people.
Mm-hmm.
And it almost every episode, they'd just be talking and kind of everybody sitting down, putting headphones on. And then they'd kind of be talking. And eventually the guest goes, oh, are we recording? He's like, yeah, we just kind of start and just kind of go. And I just like loved that because like that's like real life.
Because it feels like you're in the room with those people.
Yeah, like that just that felt really real to me.
Yeah.
And so the more that we have done them that way, that's why I just stopped like, I'm not going to ask Aaron for an intro and I'm not going to record one either. This is better this way.
I like it. I that's why I like, and I've always made a point of this from the beginning when we started the podcast, I don't like editing out mistakes. Because I know you have to edit things.
Yeah.
The podcast is edited. Mm-hmm. It's still a formal production and it makes it a lot more enjoyable to listen to when it's edited. But if we screw up or do something stupid, like I just knock over my water right now.
Yeah, we leave that in.
Hopefully that would be left in.
Yeah.
Because it makes it relatable. It's like, oh, wow, that's so funny.
And then like, especially think about things that you follow or listen to or whatever, like when they show real life stuff, like that's more compelling. That's more interesting.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's very few things that it's like, if this is not dialed in perfectly, it is not going to be as good. Like, there's just very few things like that in today's world that are that are conversational, that are meant to be loose.
Yeah.
It can't be loose and tight at the same time. Like, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, I like that we're not doing intros anymore. Before we started recording, you were asking if all dozers have rippers.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like that's a podcast Dirt Talk topic.
Yeah, I mean, I know the answer, but for like the listeners, if you want to.
Sure, of course. You already know.
Yeah,
of course.
I already know.
The answer is they don't always have rippers. Okay. There's specific applications that have no ripping whatsoever. Like if a dozer is in a coal pile or in wood chips or in a landfill, they will never have rippers. Or if they do, I don't know why they do.
They're never getting put down.
Yeah, they're never getting put down. The thing is, those dozers, though, they always have counterweight on the back end. So you'll always see something on the ass end. And that's because the dozer is balanced. to have that weight on the back of the machine.
So even if they have taken off the rippers or whatever, they still have to have something back there.
It's engineered to have a certain amount of weight on the back of the machine with the ripper. That's how they do it, because most dozers do have rippers on them. A difference too is in a place like Middle Tennessee, so someone will go buy a new D8, they'll go Thompson Machinery, put it in the shop, and remove the ripper because it's just rock here. So
you
no one
would never use it.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. You see all these dozers with no rippers on them, and they kind of look funny without rippers, mm-hmm. like a D8 or something a little smaller or a little bit bigger, like D8, D9. They just kind of look funny without them, like a dog without a tail. Like, wait a minute, there's something missing here. Mm-hmm. And they put just little counterweights on the back end.
Okay, because I think that's sort of what I meant by it's like, I mean, I've lived in Middle Tennessee for 10 years, and like, I just don't see the rippers in real life very often.
Oh, last time I was at Thompson, they were taking a ripper assembly off a D8. It's just standard practice around here.
Yeah, she's like, well, we don't need it, so yeah, go take it off.
Yeah, they bought it from some other territory, and all right, we're not going to use this here because it's just straight up rock. But then I was just out in Denver, Colorado, Bemis. They run D9Ts. Of course, they all have rippers on them. And they're probably triple shank rippers, and they're sitting there just ripping the cut over and over and over again to prepare for the 631s or 627s.
What is the, like a D9T, what's the difference between a D9 and a D9T? Or is it the same thing?
It's the same machine. It's just a D9T is like a 2021 Ford Super Duty versus a 2018. It's just like that new model. They don't run off model years. They run off these just weird lettering systems.
Got it. Okay.
But then Caterpillar, for whatever reason, I don't know how they're going to future-proof this whole thing, but they removed the letters off dozers. So now it's just D1, D2, D3, D4, D5, D6, D7, D8, D9, D10, D11. There's no T's. There's no R's.
No more trim package, man. You're getting stock base.
Buy a D11, it's just a D11. For a while, it was like D10, T2.
Yeah, that starts getting confusing.
So now there's a 2 after it. So they just way simplified it, which kind of made it a little bit more complicated. Because it's like you have a D6, you had a D6T and a D6N. Now a D6N is a D5, but a D6T is a D6. It's like, come on, guys, come
on. Yeah, that is confusing.
And maybe I just screwed that up. Maybe a D6N isn't a D5. I don't know. I don't know which is which anymore.
Well, you answered some of my questions in a way that I feel like I have closure.
Yes.
Oh, Lord.
So that's what we have going.
Dirt talk. You know what I'm saying?
I don't know. And then every manufacturer does their own thing because, of course, they all have to be different from one another. Mm-hmm. So some manufacturers that like their naming convention makes a lot of sense. Others, it's just completely arbitrary because they want to be different.
That's just how it is.
Okay. But they're all letters and numbers. It's not like the Caterpillar Excalibur excavator. Like what if equipment was named like cars?
I mean, it would be cool.
You'd have to, they'd have to be like really badass.
Yeah. It's like we have like a naming game when we're like, I say we, like my wife or like with friends, if we're driving and we see like campers, because they all have kind of ridiculous names. We'll add a phrase in front of it that's, you know, makes it a little PG-13. But the names are all over the place when it comes to campers, RVs.
Yes.
Some of them are really cool. Like it is, like you said, like Excalibur.
Yeah.
But other times it's just like the sun.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, okay.
Why do RVs always have the stupid designs on them?
I'm with you.
How did that become a thing?
Who is approving them? Like, oh yeah, that looks like today's design.
Sure. They're all like these brown, like wispy little wind things across the across the RV. You're like, that looks stupid. I think
the person who designs RV like logos and stuff is the person who designs the classic wolf shirt.
That's what I feel like it is. Yes. Yeah, the only one that's kind of figured it out is like Airstream, for example. Yeah, it's just that's beautiful, awesome. Elegant. I could get behind that. But all of these RV, they just look stupid. I like either I would just get white, black, or
An Airstream.
Airstreams for forever. My grandparents had one, and they would just like drive it to Florida. You know, they were the types that snowbirds, but they didn't like, they like lived in a trailer down in Florida, you know, just like a like mobile home. That was their thing down there. And when they were at home, they used the Airstream as just like another room or two.
Super cool.
So when people came, it's like, yeah, you just like, you're going to stay in the camper. And that was like so cool.
It was probably nicer than the house. Those things are.
It was slick. And, you know, I'm sure they like had to beg someone to take it when it was, when they got rid of it. And now that thing would be worth $100,000.
Yeah. That's the problem. They're so expensive. Mm-hmm. But even RVs in general, like in fifth wheel, dude.
And you can't sell them. Like they're impossible to move.
Crazy expensive. That's a whole, and right now you can't, but you can't buy them right now, especially like pandemic. Everyone started buying RVs.
Interesting.
Yeah. Oh, huge, huge explosion.
We've got a neighbor who they like got one from, you know, her parents passed away and they had one. And so they like, you know, took it on a couple trips and were like, we don't really want an RV. And basically came out even on like what it costs to, you know, make some repairs and do all that stuff.
Yeah, I don't think they're a very good investment.
Well, they're definitely, it's honestly like the combo of cars and, I mean, it is a combo between a car and a home, but, you know, homes typically appreciate.
Yeah.
And cars definitely depreciate unless you have like, a Jeep or something, basically. Well,
it's depreciating and then you have the expenses of essentially operating a home. Like,
and just semi-truck.
Just operating that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Woof.
Well, yeah, it's not like you roll into any gas station in America. Let me put in $40. You know, you're spending a lot on day to day. You know, if you take it out a lot.
Yeah, I still want one. I just want a small Airstream trailer that I pull behind my pickup truck. Sure. And one of the small ones. I don't want anything elaborate. I don't want to. The thing with the big RVs is you start to really limit where you can take them and put them.
You can't go to a restaurant just like on your travels. You have to like, you then have to pull a car behind you. Like it's a whole thing.
Yeah. And you're basically, I'm not a big like RV park kind of guy. Mm-mm. I've done that. Just not my thing. I like to go places with an RV, which is why originally when I started BuildWit, I was going to buy a Sprinter van and just travel around in the Sprinter van. That's still an idea. I still want
to
build out a Sprinter van. It'll happen at some point and we'll just drive it out onto a bunch of different job sites. Well, but the nice thing is the Sprinter van. So you have everything you need to live. Cool. And you can take it anywhere. I mean, if you get the long wheelbase, you're still, it's a pretty large, it's like driving a box truck, a pretty large vehicle.
Yeah.
But so you can't go into a parking garage, but it's, you can kind of take it anywhere.
Yeah. You can still park in almost any parking lot and then,
yes,
you know, and be okay.
Yeah.
One of my, I don't even say it's a guilty pleasure, maybe just one of my pleasures is looking at outfitting videos of people who like customize the inside of a Sprinter van. I think it is one of the coolest things in the world.
It's become this huge deal. Dude, the money they spend on these Sprinter vans.
That's nuts.
Yeah. If you want like a fully built out one, like a nice one.
Like if you're not going to do it yourself.
Dude, $250,000. No problem.
Jeez.
No problem. I mean, you can get them cheaper than that, but $250,000 is not all that crazy for one of those.
Yeah. Things. If you want to go buy one that's done.
Like done. It has bathroom, shower, solar, like the full package. Yeah. Like $250,000. You can get a lot cheaper. I mean, you can go way cheaper. You can put a 2x4 bed frame in the back and call it good.
Like, yeah, and then you sleep there.
And use a Home Depot bucket to shit in if you need something real bad. Mm-hmm. But I would want to go kind of nice.
Sure. I follow this guy at This Wild Idea. There you go. Enjoy that.
I think I follow him too.
He's pretty cool.
Yeah.
His whole thing. But he's
Is he the one with the dog?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
It's cool.
Yeah, yeah. And he's building the tiny home right now?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And he's always kind of got like projects. He lived in Nashville for a while.
Yeah.
But he's got an outfitted like red Sprinter van. That's very cool. But for a long time, and he still owns it, he's got like a 70s era F-150 that he's got a drop-in camper in the back that pops up.
I've thought about that too.
It is awesome because you put that thing down, it's just a truck.
Yeah.
It's just a truck. You can go anywhere you want as long as a regular ass truck can fit. And so, like, the Sprinter van thing is always very, very cool. But, like, I'm like, for somebody who's traveling with, like, him and his dog, like,
that's the way to do it.
Old school Ford with a, oh, man, it's sick. And who knows where he's could find, you can't find those kind of campers.
No.
Those, like, drop in, pop up campers.
No, that's the other way. I've even either, like, an off-road version of a Sprinter van, because we were going on job sites, it'd have to be somewhat pretty well equipped.
Pretty rugged.
Or a back, like something to fit in the pickup truck. And I've seen some badass ones in the back of pickup trucks.
That'd
but
be cool.
You put it in the bed of a Ford or Toyota, like you're going to be good to go no matter where the hell you are or any pickup truck. I mean, like pickup trucks are pretty well made these days and they're built to go off road. So that's a play. And I've very much considered that as well.
There's time.
Oh, I'll have one for sure. Yeah, for sure.
You let me borrow the 250 this week for about 2 hours. Man, I dream about the cab of that car.
Mm-hmm.
It is too far. I'm a very tall person. If I'm not the tallest person to build it, I'm the second tallest person to build it. I'm like solid 6'5".
Yeah, Matt Biddles, he's up there too.
He's up there. So is Justin too.
Yeah, Justin.
He's really a tall guy too.
Sure.
We got a couple 6'4" plus guys.
Mm-hmm.
And driving the F-250, I cannot reach the pedals if I run all the way back in the chair. All the way back. I'm like, this is phenomenal.
Well, but the funny thing about the cabs in those though is the cab in that 250 is the same size.
It's 150.
Yeah,
I know.
So in the 150, you get the same amount of room. They're awesome. They're just like, dude, just driving a diesel truck, I just love it. You feel like a big child.
It sounds different than a normal car, you know, just doing regular unleaded.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I freaking love diesel trucks. Mm-hmm. And I was never one to look at a diesel truck growing up, be like, I want one of those. But now that I've been in the construction industry, blue collar life, you know, pickup trucks, they give you a weird amount of credibility for whatever reason.
And, oh, I fully agree. We've talked about that before. It's like pulling onto a job site. If you're in a pickup truck, that's, you like specifically don't get like negative eyes.
Oh no, in that truck, put my blinky lights on. I can go wherever I need
to go.
That's
a real guy.
No one asks you questions. Mm-hmm. And it's awesome. It's like we were joking about it yesterday. Walking into Disneyland with a ladder or a movie theater with a ladder. Just shoot, the guy has a ladder. I mean,
he must be here for something.
Yeah, he's definitely here for something because who the hell would have a ladder otherwise?
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, it's a pretty good time.
Yeah. Anyway.
Truck stuff.
Enough about trucks.
RV stuff.
You know, nobody who listens to this podcast probably even has a truck.
No. None of that was at all relevant to our base. Should we start calling like just our base?
Our base.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm like writing stuff, I'll sometimes say like the listeners. But I don't like that removes me from whatever I'm talking about. I like the base because we could be in the base. We're still workshopping it, folks. If you've got a better name for the Dirt Talk community.
For our, you know, I think 7 or 8 listeners now.
Yeah, I mean, we're growing. We're going to need a name for it.
We're growing. We're growing. We're steadily chipping away.
Oh, yeah.
To provide everybody with a brief skid steer update, because I get a lot of questions about it right now. And I'm not just saying that. It's actually kind of funny how many people are curious about how my little machine is doing.
That's such like an influencer thing. A lot of people have been asking me about.
Guys, I'm getting so many questions. Seriously, people have asked me a lot of times.
A lot.
And I know every time because it pains me. A little piece dies inside of me every time I'm asked.
Mm-hmm.
Miraculously, and I found this out yesterday, I thought the engine might be toast. I was prepared for them to say, engine, like you put a rod through it, done. We're going to need to get a new one. Engine was good. So then they were like, well, turbo is probably toast because all the engine oil got into the turbo. Or turbo is probably toast. Yeah, because the engine oil burned up and then turbo.
Yeah.
And then the DPF is toast because all the engine oil went through the DPF. Miraculously, turbo is good to go. They put it through dyno. We're in business.
Awesome.
They clean the DPF. So all the major components, good to go.
Wow.
Good to go. Yeah. So I shut it off in time. If you roll a machine, shut the damn thing off. If you didn't know that, there's your lesson. It's good to go, man. So I still haven't seen the final repair bill. I mean, it's going to be more than like $100. It's still going to be pretty substantial. But
yeah, $125.
It's not.
We'll see.
It's not going to be $20,000 to replace an engine though, which is pretty cool.
It's great.
Yeah. So there's your skid steer update.
Sick.
We're going to be back in the dirt before you know it.
Back in the dirt. You know, you don't have a lot of credibility when your one machine is in the shop. I mean, some credibility because it's like you were using it, but you know, you're not using it for what it's for. If it's hanging up on the figurative wall.
It's like, I feel like I, kid on Christmas morning. We'll keep up with the dirt talk theme here. You're wearing a bulldozer shirt. So we'll keep. So there's Lego just came out with a D11 a Lego. Very, very cool. But it's $500. So for all the people, and I hate to say this again, I've been asked so many times if I'm going to get it. I've been sent it by so many people. What just cracks me up. And I haven't posted anything about it. But everybody's just like, are you getting it? Are you getting it? I'm like, no, it's $500. I can't afford it right now. So say you get this new D11 Lego Christmas morning. You're just fired up about it. So stoked. You get your hands on it. You build it. You're like, man, this is so much fun. It's remote control. You're so stoked to use it.
You can remote control it from your phone.
Yeah. And then
very cool.
The moment you get it all done, your parents just take it from you. We're going to take it for like 4, 5, 6 weeks. We're not even going to tell you how long you're going to take it for. And so you're just sitting there. Damn it. So that's where I'm at right now.
What is the biggest Lego set you like ever gotten? Have you like ever get like the Death Star or any of that?
I didn't go that big of a deal, but okay. I had some pretty cool. I had maybe a front end loader and a rock truck. Like different Legos, the early Technic versions of them back in the day that were pretty cool. I might have had the Millennium Falcon.
Oh, yeah. That was a big one.
Yeah, that was a big one. But no, I was always looking at the catalog and you'd see like the Death Star or Star Destroyer and they were just huge and like $1,200. Yeah. And you dream
like
about
75,000 pieces or something.
Yeah, you dream about getting your hands on a Lego Star Destroyer. I mean,
would be sick.
How cool would that be?
I don't know where you put it. You build your house around it, actually, I think is what they say.
Well, and that's the funny thing is, what the hell do you do with that once it's done? That's the clever thing about Lego is, I mean, for how much you're paying, for the amount of time that you actually use that thing, they're doing okay.
Well, yeah, it's all about like, once you build it, then it's done.
Yeah.
You can't really like play with it. Although the remote controlled ones, you can.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot better
at
it.
It's like a thing.
Yeah, they've gotten a lot better on it.
But
now the kids have iPads and shit. They need to keep them entertained past.
It's true.
Okay, it's all done.
Man. Kids and their toys, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I'm really glad we spent some time talking about Legos on this podcast.
Hey, man, I could bring Legos up every single episode.
Legos. Well, I mean, I'm sure a lot of people listen to this are parents. And Christmas time is quickly approaching.
Are you hinting to me that I need to buy you the D11?
No. I've told Jessica what I want for Christmas.
Okay.
I just want like a shop mechanic shirt with a patch with my name on it and the Build-It logo on it.
That would be great.
So I can be a poser.
Oh, man. That's sick, though. I'd be like, and can you go leave it in a shop for like a month? Get all kinds of grease stains, run it over, then bring it over.
Yep.
That would be slick.
So I look like a working man.
Look like a working man. Anyway, enough about Legos, enough about toys. All right. I got a couple questions for the old Diggity Dirt Talk podcast.
Let's, that's a new name right there.
The Diggity Dirt Talk.
Diggity Dirt.
Yeah. First one's from our friend Christian, who
asked a couple of weeks ago about just like getting into reading, you know, starting to what kind of books, you know, he should read if he's like not doesn't spend a lot of time reading currently.
Nerd stuff.
Nerd stuff. So he said he ordered three of the books that you talked about, which is pretty cool.
That's super cool.
So he also wanted to ask about podcasts. He said, now that I've taken Aaron's book recommendations, I'd like to hear what podcasts Aaron enjoys listening to, whether he's working in the Build-A-Bit office, on the road, on a plane, or sitting at home thinking about how he rolled a brand new machine onto its lid. No shame, it happens.
I could probably give a skid steer update after this question too.
Oh yeah, that would be good.
I honestly listen to this podcast a lot to audit my speech. I'm trying to get my thoughts out more effectively and I'm just trying to think about how I talk and what I say and how I'm getting my points across. It really helps me do better at this.
Yeah.
It sounds like very egotistical, but it's more so I'm just being critical of myself while I listen.
Yeah.
So there's that. I've always listened to Andy Frisella since he started podcasting with the MF CEO Project. So if you haven't listened to the MF CEO Project, I highly recommend going way back years and years and years and listening to those episodes. It's all about business and branding. There's a lot of really, really good stuff. And then now he has the Real AF, which I think I very much enjoy listening to. Mm-hmm. I listen to right now in the mornings, I listen to Breaking Points. So to get my little bit of politics happenings in.
Yeah.
I've started to, like from a political standpoint, I like listening to stuff on both sides and just all in between and agreeing with some stuff, completely disagreeing with other stuff and just mixing it all together.
Yeah.
So I really like Breaking Points for that because I agree with a ton of what they have to say.
Well, that's like their whole thing, right? Is they're trying to really walk the line and be critical of both sides. And
I think they do a nice job.
Yeah. Discern the truth.
So I listen to them, listen to a lot of Joe Rogan. Big fan of Joe Rogan, what he has going on. What else? Let me look. I've always listened to Stuff You Should Know. If you just want to listen to those two guys talk about different stuff, that's a great like driving podcast if you have a long drive.
Yeah, because they're long, right?
And the banter they have back and forth, like those two guys, I think it's Josh and Clark, I'm a huge, huge fan of. So that's about it. Maybe Jocko podcast every once in a while is I'm a big fan of.
I'm gonna get lit.
Yeah. Well, his podcast isn't.
I know. I'm kidding. Yeah. But
his podcast is remarkably well done.
They're so long, but they've built up like a really good like rhythm to the podcast that it's. I don't know. I think it would be easy to look at it and be like they're probably on there yelling the whole time talking about stay hard.
Yeah.
And there's like a lot of like vulnerability and like really like low key stuff that is pretty fascinating. I like on that podcast.
Yeah. A lot of people, I feel like they tune Jocko out a little too fast before they actually see what he has to say or like really dive into how he delivers the message, so on and so forth. It's extraordinarily compelling. A lot of his interviews.
To be fair, the cover of his metaphorical book is pretty intense.
Yeah.
But there is like a lot of depth and nuance to what he actually says.
Yeah. And he has a lot of veterans on. It's a lot of war stories. Mm-hmm. And there's a different side of humanity that comes out in war.
Oh, yeah.
And he does a really nice job unraveling all of that. So I'm a big fan of that podcast. Good dude. Too. So that's what I listen to for whatever it's worth. Yeah. But I listen to podcasts every morning when I run, typically is when I consume them for the most part.
It took me a while to move into podcasts during exercise because I'm like, well, I need like, you know, some sort of like pump up or whatever.
Yeah.
And like the older I've gotten, the easier it is to listen to podcasts when I'm running or doing whatever because I can't segment the time in my head the same way. Mm-hmm. Versus like if I'm listening to a song and I've heard three songs, I can vaguely guess how long I've been running.
Sure.
But if a podcast is going, I don't know. And you just kind of
you'll get into like a really good interview and they'll be like, shoot, 4 miles was like that.
Yeah, I like wasn't even thinking about it.
Yeah, I listened to the last marathon I ran. I was listening to a podcast. the whole time.
Really?
I was listening to Really F. Yeah.
Nice.
Thank you, Andy Frisella, for getting me a PR.
It was more than one episode.
No.
Because they're long.
Yeah, it was like a 2-hour episode or so. And then I would just listen to music the rest of the time. Yeah.
Solid.
For the first 2 hours, yeah, I just listened to a podcast.
Yeah. Aaron's marathon time of 2 hours, 59 minutes, 57 seconds, or 52, 53.
Boom.
Something like that.
I was like 52, just under 3 hours.
Perfect.
I needed to work that in somewhere.
Another great question from Cole.
Okay.
He addresses this question to BuildWit.
Okay.
As a whole thing.
Well, I'm the official spokesperson of BuildWit, so
there was a time when you were BuildWit.
I was.
So we'll take it.
I was.
I'll allow it.
Yep.
All right. From Cole. He says, BuildWit, have a couple questions. First off, love what you're doing in the industry. Thanks, Cole. As a young business owner, how do you earn the respect of those older/more experienced than you while also holding those same people accountable?
This is a hard one for me to answer because honestly, I've never struggled with it all that much, which I guess has been the way I've done it is...
Not worry about it?
Yeah. I've always been around older people and I've always been kind of an older soul and I've always related to like my friend's parents growing up.
Well, you do eat dinner at 5 o'clock.
I do.
You go to bed at like 8:30. Yep. So you have that in common.
Yes, sir. And I've always been around adults. So for talking to people much older than me, it's never even really registered. With blue collar people though, it might be significantly different. Mm-hmm. And like, it was funny. We just talked about this on a podcast. A bunch of the TikTok comments, me explaining how 631 scrapers work. I get it. You guys are all 631 scraper experts. Or it's like, you 631s, you should see some 657s. They could run circles around the 631s. Okay, cool.
Like probably. Like,
you probably, and you clearly understand equipment economics. It, like, Jesus. But the funniest thing was, like, there was no respect. This kid looks like he's 12. And in fairness, I do look like I'm 12. I still can't grow facial hair. I get it.
You do have a little bit of a something on the chin right now.
This is probably a week.
Okay.
About maybe 5-6 days.
Sure.
What I'm doing.
Yeah.
So I think the big thing is allow them to participate in building the plan. We've talked about this with Jocko. Talked about this a lot of times.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them what they think. Allow them to have a say in how we do things. Don't act like you know everything. Don't be the guy that's, I know everything. I'm the first one to admit when I'm wrong, when I'm an idiot, when I don't know something. That's how you get people's respect. That's why I think I've done well within the organization is, guys, I'm doing my best here, but I don't know what I'm doing. Or hey, like I really screwed that up. Can you help me out here? Or what do you think? I think it's just less of a generational thing. And then as a leader and as a business owner, it's entirely your problem to figure this out. It's not really their problem.
Yeah.
So you need to figure out how to interact with these guys and how to get them to interact back. And it's just trust, respect. You gain that trust and respect by being genuinely curious about what they have to teach. And if you're not being weak as a leader, as a young kid, by asking someone that works for you how to do something. That's the point. You don't know everything. That's why you can't do everything. That's why you hired them in the first place. If you could do everything, you don't need people to work for you.
Mm-hmm. Like
that's the point of it. It's the opposite. You're showing strength. You're showing respect. You're showing curiosity when you ask these people and talk to these people about what do they think? What's the best way to do something? And get them bought in on it.
Yeah.
And maybe you see a better way to do something, but they want to do it this way. Maybe to earn that respect, you do it that way for a while. And you put your ego aside and say, hey, this guy's been doing it for 40 years. Maybe he knows something I don't. And then you get that respect. And then when you want to speak up, you have that leadership capital. They might actually listen. It might take you 6 months to get there.
Yeah.
But that's cool. So I think like young guys, don't be insecure about it. Watch how your ego is playing a role in it. And even if someone works, like that doesn't mean anything. And just know as an employer, everybody has a lot of options right now. So like you need to listen to me because I give you a paycheck. They can just be like, okay, well, screw you. The guy, I just passed 5 help wanted signs on the way here. So I'm just going to go down the street. Like you're not really in control, by the way. Like newsflash, you as an employer, you don't run the show anymore. Sorry to tell you that. And so act accordingly. Like, I think that's what I would do. Care for people. Really care about them. Really go out of your way to make sure they have what you need. Serve them. That's how I would do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I would do it. And you might have just a crusty asshole who does not just constantly pushes back. Then get rid of them too. That's okay as well. Like if you really can't push through, if some guy's just being a total asshole and really poisoning the well, that then get rid of them. Okay. And maybe you really need them. You're better off getting rid of them and figuring out how to make do and then finding the right person than keeping that person for fear of missing deadlines or something like that.
Yeah.
10 out of 10 times from a cultural perspective, if someone's really a pain in the ass, which there are some of those folks.
Sure.
Okay. Move on. So that's what I would do. I would look to serve that individual, try to learn as much as I can from them because if they've been doing it for 30, 40 years, they've done it a hell of a lot more than you have. Even if you think you know a better way to do it, a lot of times that's probably not the best way to do it. The way they're doing it is probably the best way to do it.
Yeah, because they've been doing it.
Yeah. Like, cool idea, kid, but I've tried that. It actually doesn't work. This is why. So this is why I do it. So
I feel like those dynamics, I mean, would certainly be tough, like on the surface, but it is one of those things where you have to kind of like give up a certain like sense of control almost. If you're the, you know, if you're the business owner where it's, you know, it's like you have expertise in some things as like the business owner. Like there's a reason you are the business owner. But having like the humility to say, I am not an expert in every single thing my company is doing. Therefore, I'm open and eager for these conversations with people who probably are experts at, you know, weak spots for in my, you know, experience.
Yeah.
I mean, that's certainly like how you've grown BuildWit. You know, like you're obviously not the oldest person here. You're not the most experienced person. Yet like you've defined your role and to be, here's the things that I'm bringing to the table that are the most valuable for the team. And then basically since then, you and the leadership team and all that have hired people to be like, all right, where do we have, you know, weak spots? Where do we have blind spots in terms of what we're capable of? Oh, we'll identify those places and then go find people who are experts in those things. And so like, I think even when we've not had to go hire somebody, but like find who at this company is good at this thing that we're currently not doing. Like we identify that and bring them into those conversations. And so I feel like to me, this kind of feels the same way where it's like, you know, there is a bit of just like, how do you communicate with somebody who's much older than you, who has a lot more experience and might not be as open to constructive conversations. But like, that's like that's like separate from how do you lead somebody who has expertise that you don't? Because to me, like, that's what this question sounds like.
Yeah.
And that's what you've been, that's more of what you've been talking about.
Yeah. I think it's a real thing. The pride thing, and that's all there. But if you really genuinely care for people, if you really maybe work alongside them for a while and you don't have to go to work with them, you know, side by side for 40, 50, 60 hours a week. But if something sucks and they're slogging out in the rain, all right, maybe you do that too with them. How can I, or even the fact that you're just out there in the rain with them, that's a quick way to gain respect.
Yeah, just be out there.
Yeah, it's all about just,
interesting point.
It's just flipping the paradigm and too many people, because I'm the business owner, I'm the boss. It's like, you're not the boss. That doesn't make you a leader or anything like that. It doesn't make you make people really listen to you, respect you, nothing. You have to earn it. And you earn it by doing it however you do it anywhere else, is just caring for people, listening to people, asking questions. That's that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there are any misconceptions about just leadership in general, that it's like the myth of, you know, leadership is telling people what to do and really it's listening to what they have to say? Like, is there anything that kind of jumps out to you just as we're talking about this?
Well, one of the big slaps in the face when I did the council event with Echelon Front was when Jocko said, you know, the best missions, and I've talked a lot about this, the best missions were when I just sat in the Humvee and just said, execute, execute, execute. You think the leader's out there leading the charge, you know, seeing things the crew's not and laying out the plan and this and that. Everything you think a good leader is almost always the complete opposite of what a good leader actually is. And that was a crazy breakthrough in logic for me. So rather than like, and this is a good example, how do I get people's respect? Do I try to prove myself more or try to assert myself? It's like, no, you'd probably be better off deferring to these people. And okay, if they're really adamant about doing something, at least just why are we doing it this way? And coming at it from a genuine sense of curiosity, not to go prove them wrong, but to, okay, shoot, like, Ralph, I mean, I want to do it this way because I think this is going to be more efficient. But he's saying, we're doing it this way. Fuck. Like, instead of getting frustrated, I'm going to talk to him about, can you explain why we're doing it this way? Like, why are we going to do it this way? He's going to lay out rationale if I approach in a curious, legitimate,
yeah,
caring, curious way.
And not a judgmental, like, I need you to explain this to me because I think it should be this other way instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And then that opens up a door for conversation. And then you can ask him, well, so we're going to do it this way and that makes sense. But did you consider this? Like, did you consider that there's going to be trucks here at 1 p.m. and you're going to be in their way? And you might know something that he doesn't as boss, as kind of big picture, seeing the whole project. And maybe he didn't. And maybe you work through that together. But you're coming at it from you could just assert yourself and say, no, we're doing it this way. And then you build resent and you're not going to build any kind of team that way.
Yeah.
I've been admitting I don't know what I'm doing and being curious and deferring to others has served me really well so far.
I like that you're highlighting the word curious too. I mean, I think that there's a lot of conflict resolution that can come from just curiosity in general.
That's like the root of conflict resolution is instead of just digging in on my side and proving I'm right, Alex feels this way for some reason. Let me actually spend my time figuring out why Alex feels this way. I'm way better off doing that than trying to prove my point.
Than being like, no, you should actually be feeling this way.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't get anywhere with that.
No.
And that's not even business. That's just you know, life. Relational.
Yeah.
Cole, thanks for reaching out. It's a great question, man. I think that is a Dirt Talk Monday edition.
Yet another.
We did it.
Yet another podcast. We did it. Thanks for listening, everybody. If you have questions, comments, anything of the sort, send them on over to dirttalk@buildit.com. We would love to hear from you.
I do love those emails.
Alex loves the emails. Fan mail, whatever you want to send us. If you want to send us anything to the office, stickers for the sticker wall or whatever it may be, 1400 Adams Street, Suite 202, Nashville, Tennessee, 37208. And with that, we'll see you on the next episode. Stay dirty, everybody.
Thanks, y'all.
Oh, okay. No more podcasting today.
For you. Oh, I got one more. It's okay.